What if we could live more in harmony with our animal friends and the whole of nature simply by stopping and listening more? Chats with Animal Professionals and Interspecies Communicators aims to bring animals and the world of nature front and center. We'll be chatting with professionals working in the animal industry and intuitive interspecies communicators about their work in the field. I'm your host, Tracy Pierce. I'm a professional animal communicator and lifelong animal lover and spiritual explorer. I've worked with animals professionally since 2002, and I've been studying animal communication and the human-animal connection since 2014. Chats with Animal Professionals and Interspecies Communicators is for animal lovers, nature lovers, intuitives, spiritual seekers, and those interested in interspecies communication. Our aim is to bring awareness to these professions and to expose the new and old science behind some of these seemingly out-of-the-world careers. We hope to educate and tickle your mind about what is possible by discussing this work and ways we can work with our animal friends, nature friends, and the planet as a whole, instead of them always being a secondary consideration. Join us now as we explore today's topic. Hello and welcome to this episode of Chats with Animal Professionals and Interspecies Communicators. Our guest today is Steph Scoopin, and our topic is Animal Communication and Veterinary Care. How can they work together? Steph Scoopin worked as a veterinarian for many years. Steph was introduced to animal communication in 2007 at a veterinary conference. Animal communication helped Steph with behavior cases in practice and with her dog when Roxy kept running away to hunt. Steph's passion is to help animals be heard and seen as full persons with a range of emotions and intelligence that equals and sometimes outstrips humans. Due to her background in veterinary medicine, she's ideally placed to help pet parents navigate their pets' life stages and understand therapy options. Her business, Sifo Animal Communication, is named after her ginger tomcat Sifo. Sifo means precious gift in the Xhosa language. Welcome, Steph, to the show. I'm so glad to have you here today.
Yeah, thanks, Tracy. As I said just now, I'm so happy. This is like totally good timing to bring this show, because I have been doing the communication now for a number of years, and I am actually ready to start to approach some veterinary practices and say, hey, this is what I do. What do you think?
Awesome. Yeah, it's always great when things work out timing wise. I wonder if you could tell our listeners a little bit more about you and how you came to do this work that you're doing.
Of course. Well, there's a long story and the short story. I'll start with a short story. My degree, as you just said, as people just heard, is in veterinary medicine. And I tried to make that work for me for a long time. And generally, like I'm just a bit of a gypsy. I'm finally acknowledging that's who I am. And so I like to live in different places, and I also like to do different things. And so when I moved from South Africa into the US in 2015, I didn't transfer my career certifications because I wanted to start off on my own path. And half of that path is animal communication. And it's been so interesting to me because my other half path is working with humans, like, you know, helping humans to find more space and more freedom, more mental freedom in their lives. And it seems that both of those only grow together. They do not. If I just focus on one of them, either one of them, I stagnate. So I have to do both together, which is very interesting.
Can definitely relate to that, and feeling like a gypsy sometimes, and always having more than one thing going at a time. I can definitely relate to that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you mentioned that you started out with more traditional veterinary studies and then moved towards animal communication around 2007. Could you tell us a little bit more about how that transpired, or how animal communication really helped inform your veterinary practice?
So I think I've always felt like really connected to the natural world, like even when I was a child. Although my dad absolutely hated animals, like he's one of those person who would throw stones at cats passing through the garden. But I ended up with horses to ride, and then so coming out of that, veterinary medicine just seemed like the logical career path. And as I said, I've did try to make that work for me for many years. And I went into alternative medicine as well. My specialty is homeopathy. I worked in integrative practice. And then maybe in 2005, 2006 or so, when I was working small animal practice in Cape Town, I was at this conference where I had this alternative medicine conference, where I sat in this lecture by Anna Breitenbach, who's a very well-known behaviorist, sorry, animal communicator, not behaviorist. And so basically what she said is, this is what I'm doing, this is how communication works. And she says, and anybody can do it. It's not like a special gift. It's just a thing that you can learn. And she's got the most amazing stories to tell, because she works with wild animals in Africa, which for anybody who has a heart connection to animals is just so precious. The communications that Anna comes up with. And so I was very skeptical, really, coming from conventional veterinary medicine. But I asked for her card, and then the next time I had a behavior case where I just couldn't make any headway with remedies or with modification. And so I asked the person, the human, like, would you be interested in exploring this? And we got Anna in, and within two sessions of communication, it was clear what the cat needed. And and we could give it. And it was just not what we as humans would have thought as this. So obviously I was like, wow, okay, that's amazing. And then the next communicator I called in was when we took on Roxy, who's now deceased. A dog in a nature reserve keeps breaking out and goes hunting, and she just couldn't understand why we got so upset with her. And then with the communication, she was like, oh, okay, now I get it. And then we brokered a deal. The deal was, Roxy stays behind the fence and she gets two walks a day. And Roxy was with us for 10 years, and she never broke out again. But we kept our bargain of the two walks a day. So yeah, I mean, that was like, how did that inform my veterinary practice? I think it informed my veterinary practice in the ways of seeing animals, that it just adds a whole other dimension to animals. It's no longer this, or just organism with fur and a certain behavior pattern who's got a certain disease. It's a person, like it's a whole person. It comes into the room within a certain state of in a certain emotional state. It has a certain personality. And like all the vets and all the techs and people that work with animals know this. And but we, because we're scientifically trained, we're able to ignore it if it suits us. And I think that for me was the biggest turn, is that once I'd seen those communications, and then I started to learn it myself. I did a couple of day courses, and then I did an intensive. I couldn't ignore it anymore. It wasn't a thing anymore that I could say, oh, like I know better than this animal. That was no longer a thing. Did I answer your question? It
Yeah,
feels like I went on a
that
tangent.
makes Yeah, it makes sense. It sounds like, so in the beginning, you were bringing the animal, other animal communicators in to do the communication while you were doing the veterinary practice. And then that led to you being trained as an animal communicator yourself. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So it sounds like adding the animal communication to your veterinary practice helped you produce even more positive outcomes for the animals you were serving. Did you find that to be true?
Yes, I would definitely say that. Absolutely. You know, for me, especially, it worked well together with homeopathy, because homeopathic remedies are prescribed at least half on personality profiles. So the closer the remedy matches the personality profile of the patient, the better results you get. So if you can tune in with the patient on that level, you know, your prescription of remedies just works so much better. That's so definitely for that. And then, you know, quite honestly, people talk to the animals all the time. Like, And I think most of us who have or who live with animals, you know, like you start changing the language. All right. Also, you don't want to really say we have an animal, because that's an object. Like, I live with animals. Most people will hear their animals, just don't call it that, because it's not within the accepted language of what we're being taught, or what we have been taught as kids. And I see the same with the vets and the techs and the assistants that I've worked with. I'm pretty sure most of them hear that. They just don't call it that. They call it maybe intuition, or be in tune with, or, but I think it is really common, actually.
I think what you mentioned about the personality profiles is really interesting. I know a little bit about homeopathy. I'm not a trained homeopath or anything, but I've learned a bit about the personality profiles, and I see how that would be super helpful in prescribing remedies, because who else knows better about the personality of the animal than the animal itself? And to be able to really kind of dig into that on a deeper level than what's just kind of presenting on the surface to that animal's human. I think I hadn't thought about it quite in that way. That's really interesting about how that would work together there.
Totally. It does. And it does, especially for me, it works well because, like, a lot of animal communication is, you know, receiving impressions. So when you go through human personality profiles, it's all about words. Whereas with the animal communication, there is, like, words are a part of it, but also emotions, impressions, visuals. Like, you get a feel of, like, a whole person rather than just sentences. And so for me, that really made it much easier to match a remedy, because, you know, when you know the remedies, you have a feel for those remedies as well. You kind of know, without having to put it all into words, what they are, who they are.
I can really see how that would impact the prescription process there. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that when you came to the U.S., you let your veterinary credentials expire, but you've also mentioned homeopathy. Is that something you still practice? I guess I'm not sure how the regulations work on that.
Right. So as a not licensed veterinarian, I am not able to prescribe or diagnose. So I can't, what I can do is, you know, people that come and ask me for an animal communication, you know, often it's because the animal has some health problems. And so what I can do with the knowledge that I have is just help them navigate what kind of things they can look at, you know, where can an alternative veterinarian help? I mean, there are so many different things now. There's chiropractors, there is acupuncturists, there is you know, herbalists, naturopath, all of those people are there, or behavior specialists. And so what I can do with my knowledge is discuss with them what it is they could be doing.
Great.
And for any alternative veterinarians that are listening to this, I'm always interested to connect and have you in my network, because I'm always looking for people that, you know, for veterinarians that I can actually refer people to.
Absolutely. I'm always looking for those as well. So you had mentioned that when you were a practicing vet, that sometimes you would bring in an animal communicator to consult as well on certain cases. I wonder, did it ever happen the other way too, where you had a pet caretaker come to you with information from their animal communicator?
No, that's not
No.
something that I had happen. No,
That's okay.
just you know, as I was saying before, I think people walk in and say, like, you know, I think this is what they need, or I think, you know, I get the feeling this is what they're telling me. And so not really from an animal communicator, like a full reading, but you know, just people's own impression. And a lot of the time I think they're really close or really spot on.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point too, because I've definitely, I mean, before I was doing animal communication and might bring my animal companion into the vet, and sometimes it felt like they weren't really interested in what I thought was going on. They were more interested in, you know, going through their technical aspects of it. So at least to me, it's encouraging to hear that there are vets who listen to caretakers' information and their feelings and impressions, because I know that's not always the case, and maybe not so much in the medical world either, just with humans as well. So hopefully, yeah, hopefully something that's shifting a bit these days.
You know, Tracy, I think there is many reasons why we respond to things as we do, like as veterinarians, as human doctors, in the same way. You know, one of the reasons I went into homeopathy was because I felt most comfortable if I could more spend more time with each patient and you know, each client. And as a homeopath, you get to do that. But what I think over the years, what I also learned to understand is that really all of these different modalities have a place. And you know, the vets that do take 10 minutes to prescribe something, they have just as an important place as the animal communicator, as the other people. And once we see that, you know, we can easier say, like, okay, well, today I need this one, or tomorrow I need this one, right? So it's not this one's right and this one's wrong. It's like everybody gives a service that has value for what it is. Like, you know, same here. Like, we have in the valley, we have a veterinarian who does a lot of diagnosing, and it really goes towards finding the problem and charges more. And then we have one who charges less, and just like the old farm animal approach. And there is nothing wrong or right there. It's just they both have a place, and I go sometimes there and sometimes there, depending on what I want. And I think the same, you know, with doctors. And veterinarians also are under a lot of stress, because they a lot of them work in those clinics where they have to do 10-minute appointments. And so they honestly have to do their thing of, like, making sure they get their hands on the animals, look at all the things, and like get the diagnosis, because that is the business model they work in. You know, even though sometimes they would prefer something else.
Yeah, and I really feel like a part of that is finding the right vet for the right time, you know, and you know, the right animal. And I guess for me, I know it's been where, okay, I went to this vet, I didn't feel heard, or, you know, something didn't quite feel right. Well, that was just an indication to me that I needed to look a little bit further and dig a little exactly. bit deeper. So yeah, exactly. I totally see what you mean there, which kind of really rolls right into the next question, which is, you know, you've worked with both of these areas, veterinary and animal communication. So what's your vision for these two areas working together?
My perfect dream vision of it would be that animal communication becomes one like possible study in animal sciences, because I think it could go a long way towards the mental health problems that veterinarians themselves have. So there is a really, really high stress rate there. And animal communication needs you to slow down. It needs you to take a step back and take a deep breath and listen. And, you know, this is not even veterinary specific. Like, a lot of workplaces don't work well because there is really bad communication and people don't listen to each other. And animals have a really strong presence. They can really help us, guide us to be present with the moment as it is, with our emotions, and check in with what is presented in each situation. And if we do that, so this is what I found when I came to the US, I worked as a tech for a while, so I didn't have to do the diagnosing. I would just do the handling and, you know, looking after the animals. And I found that every time I did that, I slowed down and I allowed the animals some space and responded to where they were at. I could handle them better. I found that they would respond, allow me to do what was necessary more willingly. And at the same time, when there was an animal who's like frozen in panic, or, you know, is really aggressive and just going like not happening, I don't even have to try very long to try. I can just go like, okay, I hear you, and we're going to go ahead and do this anyway, and this is how it's going to happen. And just, I found that it makes it safer to handle the animals. You have to struggle less. You have to use less sedations, you know, for procedures. And I ended up being the person that, you know, the people would with the fractures animals would come to, because they said, oh no, I want that tech because she's good with that animal. So it's that connection that allows us as veterinarians to feel good about our work, not feel that stressed about it. And I think that animal communication can have those benefits, not just for the animals, but for the people as well, to really connect with them. Because I think so many veterinarians go into veterinary medicine because they are drawn to animals. And then having to run through each day to get this workload done, I think is why so many struggle. And if we bring that real deep connection, that heart-to-heart connection, that listening into veterinary practice, I think it would really benefit.
Wow, that really strikes me about, I guess I hadn't thought about it from the perspective of the stress level of the vet. And, you know, it makes me think about, you know, human medical doctors too, where they're forced into the system where you have to just churn through people faster, faster, faster. And, you know, we see that with human doctors as well, where it's this really high stress level. And I guess I hadn't even considered how animal communication could actually reduce the stress of the vet as well. That's, wow, that's, you've really given me something to think about there.
Mm-hmm. Because you can't communicate from a point of stress. It becomes a one-way communication. If you really want to listen, you have to slow down. The description of developing this listening ability is that you have to bring your brain into alpha wave state. And that is a very, very comfortable state. It just feels so good. Like, you know, doing my animal communications, like I do between like 3 and 6 communications a week. I try not to do more than 2 long communications a day. It really helps me to keep myself grounded, because it's like it's similar to an extra meditation per day. And so yeah, I think it can really help.
Yeah, I really agree with you that sometimes animal communication can feel very much like meditation. Like sometimes I get done with an animal communication session and I'm just kind of like, wow, I was in like the realms of highness for a while there. And yeah, that's yeah, really, really interesting.
And I think for me is also it's because it feels a very empathetic way of connecting with the animals. So there are a lot of emotions that just go through the body. For me, this is how it is. I don't know if it is for you. Like when I experience grief in an animal, I like often cry. And so it feels like it helps me to keep processing emotions in my body. And that is another thing for me that, for one thing, it connects, you know, emotions really connect us to other people. And another thing is that as scientific, conventional animal practitioners, veterinarians and techs, you know, educated in the conventional system, they are still taught to put emotion to the side. Like they don't have a place in the consulting room. And I think that is really detrimental. So, for me, while I was working as a tech or as a veterinarian, allowing that connection with the client and the veterinarian and the animal has, you know, really allowed me to have m many faithful long-term clients that really appreciated that, you know, just allowing your, like, different language, allowing your heart to open and connect on that level.
Yeah, it makes me think, you know, as mammals, you know, we have that co-regulation thing with our nervous systems. And I think it's really interesting that you bring up the thing about how vets and probably medical doctors too are taught to, you know, put the emotion aside, to just, you know, stand straight and keep your head together kind of thing, which doesn't allow necessarily for that nervous system co-regulation that may actually be really important to the healing of the patient or client.
Right. And
Yeah.
that's one of the things animals can really teach us, because they don't put the emotion aside. They are in it completely. And then when they're done with it, they shake it off. Like, you know, like we all have seen the cats and the dogs shake all the way to the tip of the tail. And then it's like, okay, moving on.
Yeah, they process that emotion and they're like, all right, let's do the next thing. That's fantastic. Yeah. So in today's world, you know, a lot of people, including probably a lot of vets, tend to think of animal communication as this sort of woo-woo, unscientific kind of thing. Is there anything that you would tell these people that might help them understand a bit more about animal communication, or how it can help the health and well-being of their animal companions?
So the first thing I can say to that is, like, that's exactly how I started. I was like, yeah, right, you can talk to animals. Sure. And then I tried it because I was stuck and I had this card and I went like, oh, okay, what have I got to lose? Let's try. And I mean, this is now 10, goodness, for almost 20 years ago. In all those years, I have seen one communication that was entirely off. One. Where the person who the animal was living with said, I don't know, I don't recognize my animal here. So it's really, it's just try it out. Try it out. It's a fun thing to do if you want to learn it. It's a way of connecting with facets of your animal that maybe you just haven't seen before. And most of the communications don't tell the human anything bad. They connect. Sometimes there's sadness and there's emotion that comes up that, you know, needs to be aired and needs to be walked through, but it, in a way, it always feels good to address that. It, like, honestly, I haven't come across anyone who said, I would have rather not done this. It just touches a part of us that we're just generally don't know how to access anymore. And I think animals are so one such wonderful guides in that. It's, yeah, it's precious. It is really, really precious. So I get it. I get the woo-woo feeling. I was there, and I'm so glad I tried it out.
Yeah, I definitely used to think it was kind of woo-woo as well. And so it's kind of funny to end up in this field. I one of the things I think has stood out to me is witnessing the change that happens in the animal after a communication. Like, even if there's no huge big change necessarily that somebody experiences, I hear a lot of people say, well, my animal seemed happier or in better spirits, or they seemed like they loved me more after a communication session. So mm-hmm. So to me, a big part of it is just the feedback that comes after a session.
Yes, absolutely, that as well. And, you know, and the feedback can, yeah, is like, as you said, sometimes it's subtle and sometimes it can be really like so obvious, you know, like, oh, there's one cat. This is like a very obvious story. Like one cat, who would claw its owners, like really claw. And, the communication brought out that the cat went like, oh, like I don't understand, but they claw me. Why is it wrong for me to do that? And it turned out the both owners had fingernails this long. You know, there's like big red fingernails, and so they would go, and the cat went, and it was explained like, yeah, no, that's actually not appropriate because you also break the skin, and the cat stopped the clawing. You know, it's like. You get really, really amazing shifts in mm-hmm. behavior. I completely agree. You know, animals that are struggling to take medication and you explain to them like, no, this is to make you feel less nauseous. This is to, you know, help you live for another couple of months because you have kidney failure. And out of a sudden they're like, okay, fine. In that case, I'll do this. Yeah, no, you're totally right.
Yeah, it's sort of the results that kind of as a way to gauge whether it's really working mm-hmm. and whether it's really true. That's right. That's kind of really what got me on board. So
mm-hmm. Yes.
So what do you feel like is the biggest challenge to vets being able to accept animal communication as a valid part of the path and diagnosing animal illness and or prescribing treatment?
Studying veterinary medicine is already a very high density course of study. So putting the animal communication in is just another thing that the students would have to take on. So I think, you know, if it's as long as it's a thing that you can choose to do as a student, it probably will fall by the wayside for quite a few of them just because it's already so much they have to learn. And But I think the more people do it, bring it to the vets, you know, it's just going to become more and more widely known. The other part of it, I think, is what we tend to forget, is that from school onwards, we are taught to pay attention to facts. You know, like school is, nobody teaches. No, that's not true anymore. There is schools now that teach mindfulness, emotional intelligence, intuition, even. But the biggest majority of schools doesn't. And so this is where it starts. It's like to be considered like a serious professional, you are not to pay attention to those things. You are to let them fall by the wayside. You know, my mother still thinks like this is, you know, like, okay, well, people pay me to do this thing, but like somehow that's kind of like super weird, because it's not part of commonplace education. So that's where it needs to shift. But we see so clearly the shortcomings of this education, where we're not connected to spirit. We're not connected to nature. We're not even connected to each other anymore, which is exactly what's missing. And I think, you know, with that, more and more people checking in with their animals and looking for that unconditional love that animals give us. And through that, we can learn to give that again back to them and then also back to other people. So it's really addictive to open your heart in that way. And so I think that's what we are starting to see. There's more and more animal communicators. There's more and more people that reaching out to them. And we also see this big spiritual resurgence, don't we? Like more and more people trying to connect to nature, to divine presence, to the sacred, and looking for that. And I think animal communication is one part of that. This, you know, this connection with nature, where we're really finding again this wisdom that you know, the indigenous people once had. And we're seeing the value of it, like in the value going forward in our evolution as people. It's just becoming more and more obvious. So yeah, I think it's a done deal.
Yeah, and I think you highlight something really important, is that this is so much bigger than just the veterinary industry. You know, in general, in schooling, at least when I was in school, there was nothing about being connected to each other. It was all logic and facts and this and no connection to each other kind of thing. And I see more and more of this, and maybe COVID played a part in this, but people are just so dissatisfied with this lack of connection and this sort of chunk, chunk, chunk kind of way of living. And I feel like that's just missing from school in general, not just veterinary, of course.
The other thing is that we're force-fed information. We're not taught to think for ourselves. And it was already prevalent when I went to school, but what's happening in schools now and in parenting to me is like scary. There is no space for kids to start thinking for themselves and to start feeling what feels right for them. And I think it just has to come back in.
Yeah, I really hope that's something that is shifting, because I've definitely seen that as well. Whew, you know, there's so many of us who are longing for that connection and looking for it in spiritual realms and places like animal communication, you know, because what you highlighted before about animals being able to show us this connection and unconditional love, in a lot of ways, they're really kind of leading the force. And, you know, it's encouraging that, I don't know, it's like somewhere around 50% of humans have animals that live with them, domesticated in some kind of manner. And yeah, it really feels like animals can lead us in that direction as well, back to connection.
Yeah. I think they really can. And And so this is a piece of my own theory, and I don't know. I'm also what I often see then there is a feeling of like, oh, animals have so much more love than we do. And I think in a way, I don't, that's not my experience in a way. I think one of the reasons animals are drawn to us as well, it's not just we're drawn to them, they are drawn to us. And I think part of it is because we do have a lot of love to give. We have a lot of conscious love that we can focus on one particular being, on one animal, one child, or a small group of beings, which in quite that same way, I don't think is there in the animal kingdom. I think that is where we as humans are different and are very attractive. And animals, what the animals do is they mirror this to us, and they help us draw that out. They help us trust ourselves in actually bringing that out, because they are much safer than other humans, right? Humans are quite selfish creatures, and scared, selfish and scared, which is a, you know, not always a good combination. And animals are more courageous, more trusting.
So true. So if there was a piece of advice that you could give to a traditional vet who's considering learning animal communication, what would you say?
There are plenty of one-day courses out there, and it just in one day, you'll get a glimpse of that this is possible, and just go for it. Have fun.
Yeah, it can be fun. It doesn't have to be another work thing necessarily. Mm-hmm. Maybe approach it from a place of fun and what can I learn for my own benefit rather than just for clients.
Absolutely. Mm. And, you know, vets are vets because they feel connected to animals. That is, you know, that's why I would think most of us have gone into veterinary medicine, because that draw, that connection has been there. And the animal communication can really just nurture that. It feels so lovely.
I see your kitty kind of came in the background there. She jumped up in the window, maybe.
Oh, she did?
Yeah, right. I wanted to say hello to us. All right. Well, thank you so much, Steph, for joining me here today. If our listeners wanted to learn more about you and your work, where would be the best place for them to go?
For the SIPO animal communication, the best place would be Facebook. It's the SIPO animal communication site.
And you do some other work with like consulting with vets too, right? That to help them. Mm-hmm. Is it learning animal communication, or it's also like dealing with stress and other things with being a veterinarian? Is that correct?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. I do teach animal communication. I've just started teaching last year, and I did two lovely courses. But the work that I'm doing with veterinarians is mostly part of, you know, because it is such a challenging career. And I know that having stress just closes us down in so many ways. And I went through that myself for many years. And so I teach a way of questioning the thoughts and the belief patterns that keep us on that hamster wheel, and bringing more space and freedom into daily life. That's the work I do with veterinarians and other people in, you know, challenging careers and challenging life situations. And my company for that is called The Leader's Work, leading us into this new evolved space of humanity.
And is that your website too for that piece, theleaderswork.com?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay, awesome. We'll definitely include both of those links in the show notes. So if our listeners want to just pop on over there, they'll be able to. Well, thank you so much, Steph, for being on the show here with me today. What a fascinating conversation. It's been really, really great to connect with you.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel very grateful, and I just also feel in tune with the universe. It feels like, oh yeah, come on, this is the time, let's go. So thanks for being that universal messenger saying, yes, you're on the right path.
Thank you, dear listener, for tuning in today. I hope you find yourself tickled and considering what else is possible when we decide to listen in different ways. Your animal and nature friends want to communicate with you. Are you ready to listen? If you found this podcast valuable and would like to support us, please use the donation link in the show notes to make a donation. Thank you so much for your support. If you're an animal professional or interspecies communicator and would like to be a guest on the show, please send an email to hi, that's H-I, at tracy-pierce.com. Music is courtesy of Fesslian Studios. All links we mention will be provided in the show notes for this episode. If you found this show informative or helpful, please consider leaving us a rating or review wherever you listen to your podcasts.